Welcome to the official Scottish Rugby podcast with Chris and Caroline for this special edition. We're delighted to be joined by the National Team Doctor, Scotland's Chief Medical Officer.
Ex-Chief Medical Officer,
well,
Caroline.
Ex-Chief now, yeah. Of course. And this ahead of your, what will be, your also your final game as the National Team Doctor.
Yeah, that's quite a difficult one. That's quite a difficult one.
Favourite podcast guest ever as well.
I'd agree.
Yeah.
Been on a few times, Doc. Not to set the level of expectation too high, but you're right up there.
Oh, without a doubt.
No. We're expecting quality.
You will deliver.
Yes.
So it's a tough week then for you.
Yeah, no, it is a tough week. Probably get a wee bit emotional. In Italy, it strikes you home because you get on the bus, and the favourite time of the week for me is arriving at the ground and hearing the crowd, and particularly at Murrayfield, it's immense. But we turned towards the stadium on Saturday and all the fans are lined up and they're shouting for the boys, and you can't help but, you know, the hair comes up on the back of your head and it just, the emotion floods, and then you realise that you're very close to the end.
Is that your favourite, is that the favourite moment?
Favourite part of the week is game day. Yeah. And you know, I do very little social media, very little Facebook, but I always mention that today's the best day of the week, and it is the best day of the week for me because it's the reward for everything that you do in the working week, everything you do in the working month, everything that you do for the year culminates in being there at pitch side. And it's the same for the staff as well as the players. You know, we can't be on the field, but we can be there to support them. And the best thing for me is having worked all week, having been on call 24 hours a day, is to have the privilege to stand at the pitch side and support the boys.
It can also be the hardest day of the week, and quite often it has been the hardest day of the week as well. So is there a nervousness around what might happen as well?
There's always a nervousness, and that starts the night before, and you start to run through scenarios. Mm. Are we going to get a cut? Are we going to get a foot injury? Are we going to get a hand dislocation? Finger dislocation, everything runs through your head, but then, you know, come kickoff, you're just at the pitch side, nervous anticipation, expectation, and then you just do your job.
Mm. A lot of the times, players don't know when their last game will be. You do know when your last game will be, and with that in mind, looking ahead to this week, you've talked a bit about how you're feeling about this week. Are you able to take in that moment and to really feel the week that you're living in?
Almost been trying to retire for a couple of years now and keep getting, you know, maybe you could just do another tournament or another World Cup, or and announcements were delayed. And I'm actually secretly delighted that that's the case, because I could stay at pitchside for ever and a day, but I'm not getting any younger. And it's time for other people to take over. I've been incredibly privileged, but incredibly greedy, because it's almost like an addiction. You know, you do one game, you want to do another, and then all of a sudden one game becomes 10 games, becomes 50 games, becomes 100 games. But every game is special. Every game is different. You never know what's going to happen. Yeah, it's just magical.
I've just been catching up with some of the backroom staff there, and they've said they're really relishing this week and absorbing your breakfast chat, because it's quite a big thing.
We have Breakfast Club. It's an exclusive club. Very few people actually get up early enough to be part of that club. So you've got the kit man, you've got Bealsy, you've got Carlos, who's our sports scientist, and you've got Leckie, who's just an incredibly extraordinary individual and S&C guy, and then you've got the old guy and me. And we take turns to get the coffees in, and we chew the fat, and it's a bit like still game, you know. We just mull over what's happened yesterday, what's going to happen today, what do we need to know about this week. And yeah, we've had some reflections already this morning about what this week means to me.
Mm-hmm. And are you able to share any of those? Are you quite happy to keep them for yourself?
I'll keep them for myself just now. I'm really looking forward to going to Ireland. Rarely been there and won. Got every confidence in what the boys are going to do this week. They've just got to put in their best shift ever, and hopefully we'll get a result. But results aside, just having that privilege of being, you know, being the Aviva, the noise will be fantastic, as it was on Saturday, as it was 2 weeks ago against England. The games are so well supported now, and you can't help but get heady on that atmosphere. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, just going back to what you said about the Breakfast Club, and everything changes in professional sport at an incredible rate, and everything develops, and everything progresses, and new ideas and new trends. But I can guarantee that I think I know the answer to this question. That Breakfast Club and different forms of personality will have been in existence for 10, 15, 20, 30 years you've been involved. There'll always be a crew in every squad and every team you've been involved in. And that's kind of a nod to the type of people that are around. But I bet if I take you back to, the early 90s.
Yeah.
There would be a Breakfast Club of different personnel, but the same special messages.
Yeah, different personnel, the same old doctor. I get up early, whether I'm at home or whether I'm here. Mm-hmm. The Breakfast Club at home is myself and Christine and a couple of coffees. At here, it's the club that we've already said, and it's just like-minded individuals. Yeah. I'm on 24-hour call. Mm-hmm. Kitman has to be ready. The S&C guy has to be ready. Carlos is just a wonderful individual. Mm-hmm. He perhaps doesn't have to be up as early, but likes the chat. So,
although I did hear, didn't you sit in a seat? I think was somebody sat in Carlos's seat, or the other way around?
No, it's the other way around. if anybody sits in my seat, they know about it. I've got a seat on the bus and anybody new coming in, some of the boys will just get up to mischief and say, "Oh, you can sit there," and one glare and they move.
How have the boys responded this week? I mean, if we can take you back to a couple of weeks ago, the Calcutta Cup,
the post Calcutta Cup, the inclusion in their celebrations was truly my career highlight. It was wholly unexpected. Finn came across and said, "Doc, take your bib off, my medical bib." And I said, "Why?" He said, "You're coming with us." And that was it. And next minute, he's going up with Darji for the cup. Chewy and the guys just ushered me over, and I thought I was just going to get to stand in among them. And next minute, whoa,
<You're> near.
I'm up in the air on Chewy's shoulders. He's just done a test match for 80 minutes or so. And, you know, that was just absolutely unbelievable. And then as I got around, they said, "Right, you're coming round the stadium." Each time I turned to give them the cup, they went, "No, you're carrying it."
They insisted. It was a really lovely moment. And actually, what you were hearing from the crowd as well was very much, it was the focus on, yes, we've won the cup, but it was seeing you holding it was a hugely important moment for the crowd too.
Well, it's interesting. My daughter gave a slight, Emma, my youngest, Elna, the oldest, Emma said that there was a guy behind me had said, "Who's that old bald guy lifting the cup?" And she turned around and said, "That's my dad, he's the doctor." "Who's that cute bald guy lifting the cup?" he said.
It was brilliantly done. And to have that experience with them too, because it's just the amount of work that goes on from the whole squad and the backroom staff, from every single member of this team, to deliver that performance and to deliver that result and to encapsulate that feeling.
I feel embarrassed that I was singled out to be given that privilege, because everybody, as you say, everybody contributes, the coaches, the S&C, nutritionist, kit man, the physios, everybody contributes to what happens on match day. And to be given that privilege as an individual is just wonderful. But I do feel embarrassed that nobody else was involved.
But you can see why, I hope, as well.
After 33 years.
33 years.
It's a reasonable shift.
It was a no-brainer, actually, I think would be the
answer. What was wonderful, I literally took me 4 days to get back to everybody. I had more than 300 messages across different platforms. I had people sending messages to the media people because they didn't have my contact details. Mm. And just the good wishes were just incredible, and making connections with, you had Glenn Metcalf pinging me a message from New Zealand. And I said to him, "Look, planning to come over next year." Mm. Instant reply, "You got to call in, see us, Doc. Yeah, and it's just rekindling these old things. I had to, unfortunately, take one of the boys to hospital today to see a specialist and get some x-rays. Everything's fine, but he was just asking me about this week, and I was just swapping that information, and he said, I hope that, you know, you'll afford me the privilege in times to come. Young family, if I need some advice, will you be there? And absolutely.
That's a hugely important part of your legacy, isn't it?
It is, but it's the fact that you've got back to every one of those messages as well, that you won't say, but, you know,
people can't see.
You know, and
go back to ours, so,
yeah. And the... I suppose the involvement
Special mention to Caroline. She sent me a wonderful, wonderful letter, and that's the first letter I've had for years.
Her handwriting's good, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is superb. But I had to say to her, look, I'm married, I'm sorry.
I tried, Mossy.
I know. Did you reply with a letter?
Not yet. I replied with a cuddle just now.
It's a number of people you've helped and continue to help. And it's not just the obvious on-field players who are injured. It's players who are not injured, players who need support, families of players who need support, families of families.
The press, the media, when you're on tour.
I got a lovely email from one of the journalists who I haven't physically spoken to for many years, but he was reminiscing about Lions tours and is from south of the border and just saying, you know, how pleased he was to be able to, you know, say congratulations and make sure you look forward to your retirement, etc. It's just these, you know, it's brought so many people out that I haven't connected with for a long time and hope to, you know, at least see some of them.
I bet there's a few still asking for advice as well, Doc.
Oh, yeah, I got a phone call last week from an ex-international young family out in Dubai for a holiday, and the wee one got sick, so he decided to phone his local friendly
always on call.
ex-international doctor.
Always on call. 2010, of course, was a really big year in terms of a lot that happened during that particular day in Wales. And, you know, without going into too much or asking you both to elaborate too much on that particular day beyond what you feel comfortable with, from your perspective, Mossy, the involvement of Doc and his role when you are in a moment that you need a doctor, what is it about him that we get to...
It's terrible, but it's just normal because it's him. Honestly, like that day was mad. There was a lot of injury, there was a lot of emotion, there was a lot of happened on the game, on the field, and that's all instantly forgotten, or instantly, it's not even material because the primary care is the players. I was badly injured, but not as badly as Dom and others. But the support and the guidance that I felt in the moment from James is incredible. James is literally in hospital with running up and down the stairs between Tom's bedside and my bedside, as well as liaising with what was happening at the game. And for me to be lying on a CT scanner and look through the glass to see James standing there is amazing. Because just instant, I mean, no matter what's wrong with me, I know I can trust it and I know I'm in safe hands and I'm not getting looked after.
That relationship and familiarity, you're there to help the players. And being in hospital is a very alien environment for many of them, and it's a not unfamiliar environment for me. And so being there to actually just guide them, and you know, Mossy was there in the scanner, is right, busy going between two floors, finding out how Tom was, speaking to Tom's parents and to Max's brother, and just keeping them informed and translating what the medics are saying, because hospital speak is a different vocabulary. And in that moment of stress as well, what you take in is not necessarily understood. Mm-hmm. And just being there and being able to say in simple terms what's going on and how we're going to help. And also, we build up the relationships between countries, different medics. So going to Cardiff, it's just like being in Edinburgh, because the backup we get from the Welsh medics is just tremendous. You know, the match day doctor on that given day, I remember the game finishing and he was waiting for me at the side of the pitch, and we'd sent Tom to hospital, and he just, you know, gave me those stark words that Tom's broken his neck. You've got to go into the changing room, find Max, get him aware. where are your mum and dad, get them aware, and then get everybody to hospital. And then likewise with Mossy with his injury. Right, so that's the injury we're dealing with. Does he need to be in hospital? If we get him home, who's best to look after him? So you develop this network of people, not only in your homeland or in your home city, but around the world. And, you know, that's an amazing privilege and an amazing asset for international teams, is to have somebody who has connections and friendly relations with people in other countries.
I've spoken to so many players who can say thank you to you for giving them the lifestyle that they now have and the quality of life that they have, thanks to your interventions at some point during their careers. Others, including Tom, that's not a betrayal, he's been very public about saying that publicly too, that he credits you and thanks you for saving his life. These are very big accolades to have. And at this pinnacle week, as you're reflecting and as we are talking about all of that, my question, I suppose, is have you been aware of that role and that impact that you've had as you've gone through your career? Or perhaps is it now coming towards a time of reflection that you'll begin to ponder more deeply on those thoughts?
I think you're right, just in that latter few words there, Caroline. It's the fact that people are coming and saying thank you because of what you did at this time or that time. You can never help everybody, and you make mistakes over the years. You can never be perfect, but you strive to do the best you can. And I've always said to the likes of Chris and to other people that you endeavour to treat people in the way that you would want them to treat your family. And if you try and do that, then hopefully you'll deliver care that actually matters. And, you know, it's wonderful for people to say thank you. I've always said that it's nice to be important. It's more important to be nice. And you say to the boys, look, we managed to get you a scan. When you go in, say thank you to whoever's doing the scan for you. And it's just polite to do that. But it makes my life so much better as well, because when I go back to ask for another favour to get somebody in for an urgent scan, that person will remember how that player made them feel. It's not just the act of saying thank you, it's how you then perceive that. I've been thanked. I'm going to feel great because you've said thank you, Caroline, and likewise with the players. So, you know, if we had a bit more of that in the world sometimes, perhaps everybody would get on a bit better.
It's not only medical advice either, I'd say. James has been an absolute rock for, I don't know many. I think we looked at it as over 500 test players.
Wow, is that the number you came up with?
We are talking about test players, actual numbers. You know, I'm delighted that some of the people I've been on tours with have now been recognised as having caps.
Retrospective ones.
Yes.
What I did approach Loza with was, hang on a minute. So does that mean I've got 284 plus?
You've got a few more. A few more.
And I think Gregor
is it a retirement project?
Gregor overheard me and said, "Well, that means I've got more as well."
So. It could be a retirement project.
But yeah.
Look into the numbers because it will be.
Yeah. My first tour. Yeah. They were capped internationals against Canada and the States. So there's another two. Mm-hmm. We could add a few more. Spain, Chile.
Numbers, honestly.
Yeah, numbers
but
creep
in
up,
terms of, I think we're just over 1,200. Capped international players, male international players, and we've tried to figure out it's 500 plus that James has
been involved,
been in care of. Now it's almost half. Everybody since 1871.
There's
quite a few there. I'm saying it's not just medical.
Be careful now. I am only 66.
Exactly.
Not 166.
But that's just reality.
But of course, when I first came in, caps were not handed out in the way that they are now.
Yeah.
You know, so Gregor got his first cap. Mm-hmm. So I was there for Gregor's first cap at Twickenham when Craig Chalmers got injured.
Yeah.
But you never got on the pitch unless somebody was truly unable to carry on. Mm-hmm. There was no blood replacements. Mm-hmm. There was no tactical substitutions. You had to be injured before you got off, and so caps, you know, we'd have guys sitting on the bench for yeah. 10, 20, 20 games and never get without never getting on without touching the grass.
Mm. I know. It's not just medical advice. I mean, it is. It's exceptional medical advice. But the number of players that he supported in terms of being dropped, having a bad game, having a good game, something else.
Homesickness, I'm sure.
It's the first, is a go-to, and probably because he's up earliest and last to bed and was on call. But joking about being on call, it's not just for medical stuff. And like James has been incredible supportive of everybody that's ever walked in the door for everything. I mean, the void is...
No, my training was as a general
hole.
Practitioner, and so I used to looking after families. Yeah. And of course, what happens on tour... Family issues occur back home, and so you know the guys are used to coming in.
You always had the right answer for why I was dropped, or why I wasn't playing, or why I was picked as well.
But again, that was my view. You know, I've had some very close relationships with some of the coaches over the years. Some have been less open. I've tried to give sort of general advice, how the squad are feeling, how the players are doing, etc. Sometimes glean that information to feedback to players and encourage them, you know, as
to why
they've been dropped.
No, that can't be underestimated, right. Especially in a high-pressure environment, potentially away from home on tour, long tours as well. You can't underestimate having that ally. And it's honest feedback, but coming from somebody who's you have so much trust and support from it, you can't underestimate the value, never mind the medical value, but the value of that from all these players, from all these. I know I'm speaking on behalf of everybody, and I don't think there'll be anybody that disagrees, because it's there. And it's quite often done in humour as well, I must admit.
Sometimes I can be quite brutal. Say, I wouldn't have actually picked you anyways. You know what I mean?
That's happened. Eh?
Softens the blow. Yeah. Mostly just mentioned a word there that I think is probably really crucial, is the void. That the squad and that the team environment, that your absence is going to create.
Yeah, I think it'd
them.
Be the other way around. I think the absence from my life of this will be enormous, and I don't underestimate that. I just don't know how I'll cope with that. But we're planning to do lots of travel. I'll do some bits and pieces and just keep going. I think that the players will simply move on. Hopefully they'll remember me fondly and give the new guy or the new girl a wee bit of a hard time to start with. You've got to cut your teeth on squads. Phil Pask, one of the best physios I ever worked with, England physio, Lions tours. Mm-hmm. Phil once said there are thousands of people that would like our jobs. There are only a handful that would actually cut it, mm-hmm. because it can be a brutal environment, mm-hmm. and you've got to be able to function in a way that working at home doesn't demand. You're away, as Chris said, in a foreign country, often for weeks on end. You can get a high injury toll, an illness toll, and you just have to stay focused and sane and be available for everybody, and it's mutual support that people thrive on.
And pitch side care is very different to a clinical setting or an emergency room situation. No tour, was that the case during your experience with the Lions as well? And having that difference and having that ability to act the way that you have to act and the way that your brain has to think in that environment, how unique a skill that must be.
It's interesting. It had never truly occurred to me until I was very kindly given an award by Royal College of Surgeons, and the surgeon that was kind of giving the speech about why I was getting the honorary fellowship, he said that as a surgeon, he operated in a high pressure but clean, safe environment with perhaps six people looking on. He said, James operates in the middle of a field, mm-hmm. with all sorts going on, and not only thousands watching from the sidelines, but millions watching on the TV. He said, that's a pressure environment. And you cope with it by simply thinking, this is a game of rugby. You can enjoy the atmosphere, but to a large extent, you just have to cut yourself off and you just act accordingly. So it doesn't matter if it's at the back pitches of Murrayfield, down at Inverleith, up in Dundee. It's a game of rugby for which you're responsible for the care of those participants for 80 minutes. Outside that, you can suddenly realise that, wow, that was watched by millions. But it doesn't usually affect you during the game. It certainly shouldn't affect your decision making.
The other thing about longevity, especially in the medical world, is like the number of continual personal development courses, medicine changes, regulation changes, you name it, from drugs testing, you know, changes, the banned list, like the number of hours spent studying and evolving over such a long period is something that probably people won't realise either. I mean, you still have to be
constantly
yeah. moving forward and being ahead.
I had my annual medical appraisal a couple of weeks ago, yeah. so this is something that all doctors have yeah. to do for the past few years. You've got to accumulate more than 50 hours of yeah. continuous professional development
every year.
Fortunately for me, it's quite easy yeah. because I get asked to speak at courses. Yeah. We teach our pitchside care course. Mm-hmm. There's always something new on the go. You know, mm-hmm. most recently, lots of questions coming in for the boys about childhood measles mm-hmm. and about whether mm-hmm. they'd been immunised. Mm-hmm. Somebody asked me about chickenpox the other day. Mm-hmm. So it's constant. You mm-hmm. have to keep refreshing and reminding yourself. Mm-hmm. And I've been lucky.
That's a responsibility and a stress on you above everything else as well.
Yeah, but it's great. I thrive on learning new things. And sometimes I come out with some fairly wacky things, you know. But joking aside, I've got a resource in that Christine, yeah. my wife, she was a GP, early retirement from there. But if I had a true medical question, then mm-hmm. I would phone her. Or mm-hmm. if I've got a radiology question, I'll phone one of the radiologists mm-hmm. or, you know, phone the surgeons. We had a nasty knee injury to one of our players in Argentina a few years ago mm-hmm. with a fracture that I'd never seen before. And I needed to know whether that had mm-hmm. to be dealt with in Argentina or whether I could safely put him on the plane. Turned out that yes, I could put him on the plane, but I needed to get a hold of a blood thinning drug that I didn't have. So you speak to your colleagues there. Mm-hmm. It's Sunday morning, we're in the city, it's not available in the hospital. They phone a friend who phones a friend mm-hmm. who opens a company that makes the drug and gives me the necessary wow. stuff. So, but it's a bit like the advert that used to say, I know a man who can. Yeah. Well, I know a man or a girl or a lady who might know. Yeah. And it's just using those relationships. Mm-hmm. We were reflecting this morning about, you know, the amount of information you can now access at the touch of a button. Yeah. When I started, there was no such thing as the internet.
Yeah.
Now, if I need to know about measles, I can go online, I can do an hour's course, and then I can espouse as if I'm an expert. You can fool some of the people all of the time.
For the, 14 years since I first met you, our paths first crossed. In that time, you have had a million brilliant stories and never betrayed anyone's privacy, not once, but you have an entire lifetime of stories. I would like to think that during your retirement, you might be taking time to put pen to paper as well.
I've been asked about the book and what I'd say is perhaps I could give people time to reflect, and if they don't wish to be in the book, then I can provide my bank account details after the podcast.
Love it. You mentioned Kristen, your wife, as well, and you said the void that will be lost to your career and life not being part of. Have you got a table tennis at the house?
Cause no, unfortunately, no. Christine never.
Play? Yeah, no, there could be a bit of upskilling going on.
I'm sorry, I betray her confidence, but that's a non-starter. I say, yeah, her hand-eye coordination, as far as racket sports goes, probably non-existent.
Where will you get a fix of the TT?
At the moment, the main focus for the family is we're in a fantasy league for the football, in a fantasy league for the Six Nations. Of course, I've got too many biases, so I'm currently last in the league table. I should be first. Emma's first because I refuse to pick opposition players playing against us. So sometimes got to settle for players that I wouldn't otherwise put in my team. And I know nothing about football. You know, I looked after Dundee as a medic for 6 weeks. One pre-rugby season, early season for them, that culminated. Simon Stainrod was the manager at that time, the guy that used to wear the big fedora. And the highlight of my football career was that I was on the pitch side when we beat Rangers. I think it was 4-2, and I appeared behind Simon Stainrod in the goals section of the Sun.
when would that be then?
Oh, that's going back even 80? Before. Yeah, 80s? I think early 90s. Oh, I think. Nice. Yeah, that. My problem is, you remember stories and you remember incidents, but remembering actual years, it blurs, because my life for the last 33 years has evolved around Six Nations.
Fixture list.
Yeah. So Six Nations. So for 3 months, you can't do anything except rugby. January, February, March, that's out. April, May is okay. But then end of May, we used to start going on tour. That tour has changed, but it was anything between four and six weeks, and then you get back, and then the autumn internationals have evolved, so that's another 5 weeks, because you've got the lead and usually got four games. So large sections of the calendar are no-go areas for holidays.
And now
that's what Christine is looking forward to most.
Well, she's looking forward to it, but there will also be an adjustment period.
Yeah, but being able to go on holiday when actually rugby is occurring is going to be a big positive.
You'll still watch the games as well, though.
Sorry?
Will you still watch the games?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's no going. Yeah. I'm hoping that somehow I'll be able to get tickets. I'm saying, you know.
I'm sure you'll be all right, though.
But the product is that good to watch at the moment as well.
Oh, it's just
tickets
incredible.
Is quite challenging.
I suppose you can have mine, Doc.
I suppose final reflections then, just ahead of this, your last weekend, passing that last word over to you about how you're looking forward to this weekend and what your final thoughts are then going into it.
I think, I don't know if I'm looking forward to it in that respect. I am looking forward to being at pitch side, enjoying the game, whatever the result, hopefully positive for our side. But just being there to savour the atmosphere one last time. As you said, I'm very fortunate because I've been able to dictate which my last game is. I've always found it hard to understand what players must go through when suddenly they're not selected. That happened to me when the Lions decided to take another doctor. I'd been on six tours, perhaps become a little complacent with expectation, but never complacent that I'd be picked. But to not go on that next Lions tour was devastating for me, but it taught me a little of what it must feel like for the players. So I'm delighted to be able to go and know that this is my last game, but it's going to be bloody hard.
Dr. James Robson, 33 years. Thank you so much for your time, not just today, but for everything that you've done over that time too. And we hope that Saturday is the experience that lasts with you for a very, very long time, and it reflects the incredible gift that you've given to Scottish rugby.
Thank you.
Go on, Doc.